The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch big games from the Women's Super League live on Sky Sports.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play for my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
We should have an honest answer be a mistake.
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Folks, you know I mean it when I say I'm thrilled to have Dan McDonnell of the Irish Independent in studio. In studio, together again. Is it getting old now?
It probably is, Joe. But I am also thrilled to be here in the same sort of vaguely sincere way that I was previously.
Well, let's not take these things for granted. If this was after midnight, I'm not even sure what the rules are anymore, the Cinderella
variant.
Yeah,
it is. Like, there is that sort of slight uncertainty about things, isn't there? But let's not go down this road in this show. People don't want that.
Dan, I don't mean to mire you in grubby politics. You're above that. You're above the day-to-day squabbles of Leinster House. Although, interestingly, you were in Buswell's hotel.
I mean, I was in the epicentre of Irish political life. Earlier today, yeah, I was. I was a lot of heads sort of wandering around the place. You do, and you sort of feel like I should know who this person is. But I spent a lot of time there around the Oireachtas Committee era, as it might be known, when we spent a lot of days there.
Well, it's still Buswell's Hill is very much still like the epicentre, as you said, the swirl of political life. You've got side meetings happening here. You've got people looking over to see who's chatting with who.
Big time. Like, you're here. So the context of why I was there today, right? So the FAI and UEFA together, but I suppose it will be viewed as the FAI because it was like an FAI meeting where they're presenting to the media initially, but then also to, I think they were around with Jack Chambers earlier, and I think they've like business people coming as well, industry people, presenting this report on the measuring the value of football participation in Ireland, i.e. to break it down, the sport delivers this much to the economy. And by the way, correctly in my view, let's give us some more funding for that, because I think over the years, probably I don't think it's been necessarily funded particularly well. So that was the context of the event. But even as sort of the media section finished, there was people coming in, checking in for like the business event and the sort of the whatever other events they were having, and you're sort of thinking, do I know that person? And you're sort of overhearing conversations they're having coming in about someone they're going about Fianna Fáil, and like you're thinking
phrases like motion of no confidence imminent,
all this type of thing. You're kind of wondering, I mean, if you were a political core, would you just go and sit there and order a cup of tea and hang around in the lobby, because I don't think it would serve you badly.
No. And sure, you corner some politicians you're on, kind of a word off the record. And that's how it works.
That's how it all works. It's at that area. And as I said, I don't want to go back to doing Oireachtas Committee hearings there every Wednesday for a month. But I mean, certainly now and again, it's an interesting insight.
So in effect, and we'll get on to Paddy Bonner and what he may have said about Stephen Kenny. In effect, this was an FAI lobbying bid, as in this is what football is worth to the economy. Therefore, we could do with some more support.
Effectively, yeah. And this is, to be clear, this was more amateur grassroots level stuff as well. So it doesn't even include, say, the value of, say, the professional game or semi-professional games. I know that would be an argument that some clubs would make, that actually, if you pay wages to players, there's X amount of a tax return and, you know, other sort of services and stuff you provide. But yeah, this was more about, for example, the bottom line figure was like 1.8 million positive impact towards society, and for example, like over a billion of that is healthcare savings from football participation.
I was just going to say, because I was thinking that sounded measly. Did you mean 1.8 billion?
Billion. Did I say million?
Yeah.
Well, that would be a bad return. To be clear, that, I mean, there's little 30-second cuts on the stream. I mean,
sure, your own personal media company generates that kind of. So 1.8 billion.
To clarify, it does not.
1.8 billion.
Yeah, 1.8 billion. Sorry, and like the 1.14 billion of that healthcare savings from football participation. The health benefits of football, and thus as a consequence, that strain not being placed on health services and so on. Other figures such as the economic impact of social benefits, which again can be issues related to, football participation, then people not getting involved in crime or other things, and then there's stuff, more direct stuff about direct contributions to the economy that's to do with sort of investment, consumer spending, stuff like that. But basically, you know, for example, pitch hire and artificial pitches and the usage of that and stuff. And that's basically an important point as well, that's born out of the 221,000 registered football players there is in the country, which I was sort of quite keen to ask, doesn't include all the people out there listening to us now who are recreational footballers. Mm-hmm. Who don't play organised football anymore but might play five-a-side or whatever it might be.
So how much of this 1.8 billion are the FAI hoping to get?
Well, there was a refusal to commit to that, and it must be said that I think that this model for generating these figures, there was a UK company with UEFA that are sort of doing this. It's going to be rolled out in other sports as well too. I think in time you're going to see an IRFU proposal of this nature and a GEA proposal of this nature to identify the benefits that they offer. It's unclear how much they're looking for, but I mean, it, put simply, more than what they're getting at the moment. Yeah. But I think one of the points that actually was raised by the FAI president, Jerry McEnany, which is significant, and I mean, he actually brought it up rather than being asked about it. He did make the reference that I think around 18 months ago or so, or a bit longer than that now actually, FAI board members were basically not allowed into government buildings around the time that they would only let Roy Barrett in to negotiate the sort of rescue package deal, that a lot of the other FAI directors weren't. They were left at the gate, so to speak, or almost literally left at the gate. And it is quite clear, to be fair, that there has been a significant improvement in government FAI relations in the last period of time, and that's why they're in a position of strength. I mean, you and me, Al Martin, sitting here in this seat talking about, investment in maybe League of Ireland candidates and stuff, which is a separate debate to this one, but it is clear, I think a lot of the FAI plans in the next while revolve around government support, but they would say that this information today, they're looking for other business to get behind them as well too.
I suspect, if we're being honest, one of the attractions for the media today is that Paddy Bonner was going to be there. Paddy Bonner, an interesting case in that with his 80 caps, he was subsequently employed as the association's technical director and then was made redundant in 2010. And generally, I felt from his subsequent dispatches, I suspected there was a signature somewhere on a non-disclosure agreement in the FAI vaults, because we never heard much from Paddy about what happened. 11 years on, very much back inside the FAI tent, he was appointed as an independent director to the board in May of 2021. Now, Paddy Bonner, in various reports I've seen, has been talked about as a very influential figure on that board when it comes to deciding who might be the Irish manager going forward. Don't know how true that is, but that's what I've seen. It would make sense. He's got a footballing pedigree. I would suspect the board would listen to his opinions quite closely. And so therefore, when Paddy Bonner was due to speak to the media in advance of this November board meeting to appraise Stephen Kenny's performance, I'm sure everybody was all ears.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that is the nature of this. You go along and you listen to, as I said, stuff that is of importance.
So do we get thumbs up or thumbs down?
But then in the media pack, as you do, it's probably why.
1.18 billion. And come here, Paddy, while you're here.
Let's get down. You do feel bad about it. I mean, you had that issue last month where the women's team had September, they had the brilliant announcement of the sponsorship deal with Sky Ireland, and very positive event, but it just happened to be 2 days after the previous international window finished, and Jonathan Hill was there, CEO, who, this is great, but what's the story with Stephen Kenny? Yeah. And that is the gig. That's what happens. We talked about it briefly off air. I mean, a lot of political doorsteps all come from the announcement of, where the initiatives, and then you ask the questions about the real stuff. I'm sure when Donald Trump did his gig at the Four Seasons in Pittsburgh that time, or wherever it was, that turned out to be a different Four Seasons, I'm sure he was announcing something as part of his campaign rally, and then you get on to the big questions. So as it was here today, Paddy Bonner and the FAI president, Jerry McEnany, also speaking. So you had two board members with microphones in front of them, asked their opinion in terms of, I suppose, the live section, and there's no difference really between the two. Paddy Bonner didn't really give his opinion on November 29th I will be voting, thumbs up yes or thumbs up no, but did say he was encouraged by recent results. Sort of interestingly, went out of his way though to reference that he was quite happy with the input of the older players You know, happy to see the role of the older players. He mentioned, you know, Shane Duffy mentioned that he'd sat down with Shane Duffy at some stage, probably when he was in Glasgow, because Paddy Bonner would be based there, and was very happy to see the role of the older players back involved in recent times, which you could say is probably in line with what someone like maybe Brian Kerr might have been saying.
I remember Niall Quinn saying it as well after the Luxembourg defeat, that we were going with too much inexperience. So it wasn't an isolated viewpoint at the time.
No, no, and I think it's a view that, and it's in danger of generalising, but it does appear to be a view that a lot of, I suppose, former internationals of a certain vintage seem to share. Yeah. You know, now, and that's absolutely fine. I mean,
well, I think it really is fine, because I think there is a degree with those boys of having been there and done it, and they do know what it takes, and they probably do understand experience more.
No, they have an opinion, and absolutely, you know? And. You know, in saying that,
I just feel like you're scoffing here.
No, I'm not scoffing at all.
You're about to say the word dinosaurs.
I did not.
Okay, I'll retract.
Was that the column, like the hipsters against the dinosaurs or something? Was that not how this was posited at one stage? Although significantly,
you're neither hipster nor a dinosaur.
But I did make the point the other day that the average age for the two games against Luxembourg, the March one and the November one, practically no difference.
Is that right?
26.1 was the average age for the game in March, and 26.8 for the one in November of the starting 11.
Okay.
So that doesn't account for the fact that Shane Long came off the bench in March, he's 34, and Jason Knight and Troy Parrott come off the bench the other day.
It's interesting. It does feel like a more experienced bunch, or maybe the more experienced players are just playing better.
See, there's a difference, I suppose, between age and experience to some degree, in that you know, Kieran Clark would have played in March and mightn't have the same amount of caps as, say, Shane Duffy, but Kieran Clark would be a couple of years older than Shane Duffy. I'm trying to think who's the other example. I mean, James Collins started up front in March, who's 30, but Irish wise would have very few caps. But I mean, again, there's a difference maybe between older caps and number, you know, age, pure age, and number of caps. But I think it's important to say that the team in March wasn't dramatically younger, really. So I think there's a generalized nature of that point that I'm not sure entirely sits in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, last autumn, Darren Randolph was in goals. David McGoldrick was playing up front in Slovakia, for example. That would have been quite an experienced side.
Yeah.
And it's a younger team in certain departments now.
Let's short circuit this then. Paddy Bonner says he's encouraged. The results are just so patently on the up. He's voting yes in March on November 29th. I would think every board member, give or take.
Yeah, there does seem to be this move towards, in some cases, and you know, possibly in some of the quarters that were suggesting that seemed to be more sceptical about Stephen Kenny, and would have maybe at various times, you would have heard this message, you know, Stephen Kenny needs to finish third, or Stephen Kenny needs to avoid defeat against Serbia or he's gone. And the extent to which these were real threats or scenarios could be debated, as in, was that just reflecting the view of one or two board members or the majority? My feeling would be the former, you know, a smaller contingent. And now this has started to filter into discussions about could one of the options be that Stephen Kenny's contract would only be extended. I think Liam Brady said this on TV last week, and then it's sort of appearing elsewhere as this is a scenario that you could give Stephen Kenny an extension to cover the remainder of the Nations League campaign, which I have to say is, in my opinion, it's nonsense, right? Because you're basically extending his contract for an additional two games. So how do you do that now? Do you offer him more money now, you know, for that 1 year extension, which wouldn't appear to be, you know, your most reasonable bit of business to do either? And everyone, absolutely everyone, would, and not that it should be important how it would be reported, but I think more in terms of the perception of it, would say this is kicking the can down the road.
I think it would weaken him.
It would be a vote of, not quite a vote of no confidence, but it would a vote that suggests a lack of confidence. And
it puts him in must-win the next
and
game
it means
territory.
It means that next June, we're still having, should he get the contract for the Euros before all four games, and September. I don't think that's going to happen. My opinion based on, I suppose, information, would be that I think the majority of board members would favour the extension for the remainder of the European campaign. I think it's the most sensible and stable thing to do in terms of providing certainty and clarity for what's coming down the tracks, and some kind of halfway house extended purgatory option would be, it wouldn't, in my mind anyway, I wouldn't consider it a credible response from the board. You know, they'd almost be better, and I don't think they should do this. If you're going to do that, just, you're not sure, so let the contract run. You know, some halfway house extension is just, it's not for me. You know, I don't think that's the way it's, I don't think it's going to happen.
It would leave him virtually as lame duck manager, and it would just go down in the annals of FAI ham-fisted effort to find a solution to
the people would say, as a counterpoint, well, it's been cautious and it's been responsible, and you have to say that people are, I think some people are coming from a good place when they say that, but I don't think that would send out a statement that suggests convincing leadership. I think it would be the opposite.
Yeah, you'd sooner not offer him anything, or
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
Or give him something where he can get on with the job. The under-21s last night, we should mention, they beat Sweden by a goal to nil. It was a last-minute winner at Tallaght Stadium. You were there. Where are the under-21s in the scheme of this?
Yeah, they've had, a disappointing group, because they've dropped some, what they would, I think, consider silly points against Luxembourg, and particularly away to Montenegro, where they conceded two goals very early.
Remind me, is this for Euros or World
Cup? This is, yeah, well, everything in the World Cup, everything in under-21 realm is a Euros. You only qualify for, you know, it actually, Euros is a pathway to sort of the Olympics and stuff like that. There's no sort of World under-21 championships per se.
Okay.
It's always a Euro cycle, and it's one every 2 years. This is sort of a lifeline for them, but they're still up against it in the group. They're in a group with Italy and Sweden, which, ironically enough, Stephen Kenny was in with exactly the same two top seeds when he was the under-21 manager. There wasn't a big crowd in Tallaght last night. It sort of hasn't captured the imagination in the way that previous Kenny team did.
I always think under-21s is a strange grade, best chance.
Yeah. Particularly at the moment.
With Kenny there, it had huge intrigue.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. I think without that odd situation whereby this is the next national manager, I think it has dissipated. I don't remember much hype ever about the 20s.
Yeah, well, I mean, you had the Noel King era, which didn't develop much hype because they were getting hammered.
I think let's be honest, if you're of a certain calibre, you're into the senior team.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. And I actually would have a bit of sympathy for Jim Crawford, in the sense that, I mean, for example, Nathan Collins is a very promising under-21 player who didn't get on the pitch for the senior team, but wasn't available to him. Troy Parrott, 1 minute. And if you had all those players available. But what I would say is that it was very good last night. I think it's the best I've seen that team play under Crawford, particularly the second half. And they still do have like a spine of an interesting team there. In the sense of Gavin Kilkenny in midfield, who's playing for Bournemouth, top of the Championship. Conor Coventry, West Ham on loan at Peterborough, playing in the Championship. Will Smallbone, who played last night, started wide, moved inside later on, has played Premier League for Southampton. And there's some other, Ross Tierney from Bowes, who's joining Motherwell. Evan Ferguson came on, who's a teenager at Brighton, who I think is going to be a very big player for Ireland in the future. And what you're seeing is, it's sort of a domino effect, because players in the under-21 age grade are getting bumped up to the senior. Players that would normally be playing under 19 are now playing under 21. So Ollie O'Neill, who got the winning goal in injury time, is 18. And there's quite a lot of players in there who were younger. Whereas there was times in recent memory where the under 21 team was just, I don't know, they were just, there was a sort of a like supermarket sweep, trying to get sort of potentially Irish eligible players, throw them in the basket and give them a couple of caps. And that didn't really serve any purpose. But There's some okay players in there, and there's definitely future internationals in that side. But I do take your broader point, and I didn't mean to answer your question. In terms of the group, beating Sweden was crucial. They play Sweden away in the new year, and in reality, they probably would need to like win that game, I think, to get themselves back in the shot of a playoff sort of position. So it's going to be hard, but they've given themselves a chance.
I was curious just to have a glance through the lineup and see how many players were home-based or abroad, or even what clubs they were at. So, for instance, you've Brian Maher, who's at Bray, and then I'll just read out the clubs here more so than the players to give people a sense of things. We have Tranmere Rovers on loan from Celtic. We have Cardiff City. We have Crystal Palace. We have Cardiff City. We have Peterborough, but on loan from West Ham, captain. Mm. We have Kilkenny, who you mentioned at Bournemouth. Smallbone at Southampton. Ross Tierney, Bohemians.
Yeah, he's joining Motherwell in January. Yeah.
We have Salford City on loan from Aston Villa, and we have a Rotherham. And then on the bench, Crawley Town on loan from Southampton, Brighton. We have Borussia Mönchengladbach. We have Fulham. So, you know.
Yeah, no, and like the Cardiff, like Joel Bagan, one of the Cardiff players, has played first team this season. He's a recent recruit, you know, through eligibility rules. So there's a mixture of that.
It does tally.
And some homegrown players as well, too.
With where I would see the country generally at the moment, as in the days of Premier League clubs, because it's become such a behemoth, that league.
Yeah.
Are increasingly unattainable.
Yeah, no, and as I said, the profile of that group isn't bad, even compared to some times in recent years where, again, you know, there would have been players picked from maybe in some cases very lower down the English ladder. You know, I said, I think that group is doing okay. Right. You know what I mean?
No, they're all very respectable.
Yeah,
clubs.
No, yeah. Definitely. And as I said, there's some, like, for example, like Dawson Devoy at Bowes, who's an exceptional young player in the league here, and I think will go on to have a decent career if he wants to really push it. You know, he can't get in that midfield. I mean, yeah. But that's, and he's doing very well in Europe this summer, but that illustrates how good the guys ahead of them are. You know, so I think in time, that squad, I think a couple of them, it'll age well. It'll be one of those you probably look back at it in 10 years' time and go, oh yeah, it wasn't bad. And that isn't always the case with those 21s teams of recent memory.
That's good. Dan, 17th of November 2021 is an insignificant-ish day in our lives, thankfully. No news.
17th of November 2021, yeah, that's today.
Correct, yeah. No news being good news. That's good. However, 17th of November 2005, Dan.
Big one.
All hell breaking loose. 16 years since Roy Keane left Manchester United. Remember that day? Which prompted, we're not going to talk about Roy Keane all that much, but it prompted maybe the greatest 20 minutes of punditry in the history of television on RTE.
That's a big claim.
I know. Arthur O'Dea is going to make the case in just a moment. He's got clips. He's coming armed with clips.
If someone's got evidence. It's like bringing that to an Oireachtas committee.
I mean, Rod Little didn't expect to be talked about in this.
Oh, was this the Rod Little one?
I was surprised it was in this too. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's, I mean, Rod Little was the Roy Keane one.
Well, we could talk about this with Arthur, but let Arthur do his work in this. Was it a Champions League night then? I'm
Correct.
Trying to figure out. It was a Champions League night.
Let's just say that Liverpool against Real Betis didn't take that
didn't get too much. All right, okay.
We're back in 1 second. And our football coverage, as ever, is brought to you by Sky. Catch the biggest live Premier League games every weekend on Sky Sports.
Football on Off the Ball
with Sky. All the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
Welcome back. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent is still here.
I am, yeah.
And Arthur O'D joins us. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
You've been working damn hard out there on journalism.
Yeah.
As part of the Off the Ball production team, crack team. And somebody noted that today, 17th of November 2021, is the 16th year anniversary since Roy Keane left Manchester United, less than 3 weeks after Keane delivered an attack on his teammates deemed not fit for broadcast on MUTV. Still a miracle that has never surfaced. They really did destroy it.
I mean, I think someone stood over it. Like, I mean, I've only started watching, I don't know, like, you've watched Succession in recent times, and like this whole thing about papers and stuff being burned or not. But it's very clear that there was a very thorough job done in the case of the MUTV tape.
They had Cousin Greg on the job.
Yeah. No, they didn't have Cousin Greg on the job. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Rogan looked after, Logan looked after Rogan. Himself. Rogan. So, this was a dark time at Manchester United as well. I was at a Villarreal game around this month where Ferguson was booed. It was a nil-all draw. George Best's death was imminent. Jose Mourinho had taken over. So these were kind of the clouds hanging over Old Trafford around that time. Anyway, the point is, we all remember that. This prompted, as Arthur pointed out, maybe the greatest 15 to 20 minutes of punditry we're likely to ever see.
Mm-hmm.
So take us through it. I mean, I basically heard cackles for about 20 minutes in the office this afternoon as Arthur was working.
Yeah. So you just met him do it on air. That's basically what happened.
But I was like, we should do this on air. It's more fun. Yeah. So Bill gets the ball rolling. He starts with Liam Brady, who had written that at times Roy Keane had behaved appallingly and manipulated the press. And Liam really didn't like this. And then Bill said, well, I'm just quoting what you've said in the newspaper. And Liam said, well, let me answer the question. And he said, yes, I did say Roy Keane behaved appallingly. And all the while, Giles and Dunphy are waiting for their moments. Where do you want to start here? Take us through this. You have several clips.
Well, they came in hot, very, very hot. And you missed there was a montage as well. Played over to Johnny Cash's Hurt, I think, which is incredibly just fitting as well with the whole thing.
Oh, of Roy Keane's 12 and a half years.
Yeah. But it starts, so it really starts. I mean, that is a start, but it really starts after about 4 minutes. And you have the introduction of Eamon Dunphy.
Niall Quinn agenda. I think Niall Quinn is a creep.
That's not fair.
I read his column.
It's not fair.
Well, I could finish, if you don't mind. Everyone knows Quinn's role in Saipan. As for Liam, I talk about the manipulating the press. Roy Keane hasn't given an interview to any journalist for 2 years. He's done two interviews at MUTV this year, and they've been candid interviews. If there's a reference to me there, I don't believe personal insults help this, but if I'm one of the handpicked friends of Roy Keane in the press who helped him manipulate the Saipan situation, I'll let listeners and viewers judge that for themselves.
I mean, that's an entrance.
It's an entrance.
Yeah.
It's a start. But it gets better, and it does keep going. And the fact that, and it's kind of funny, certainly in hindsight, and especially with the kind of cooling off. I mean, that's the sort of, I don't know, is it then? I presume Saipan might have been the apex of that sort of his passionate defence of Roy Keane, but it's still, I thought it was kind of gone a little bit before 2005.
So did I.
Yeah, I thought it, but clearly not. But it's the fact, and he's so ready to talk about Giles and Brady in the years ahead, the fact that this second clip where he tries to put and fix Keane's place within that Irish pantheon, that's just, you don't see it coming.
Okay.
In the 12 years he was at Manchester United, he's been the greatest star in the history of the club. He's been one of the greatest professionals in the history of the game. They've won 7 Premiership titles, 3 doubles, a treble, and several FA Cups. And he served Ireland. He's never been a greater Irish player, and these are the two next best. But in terms of courage and conviction and achievement, he's way ahead of these two guys. Now, I'd just like to quote Patrick. Everyone's entitled to repeat.
I'm going to start the
rough stuff here.
He didn't start the rough stuff. But
he's bringing the rough stuff to the table here.
Oof. Way ahead of these two.
Yeah, I mean,
and he looked right at them as well.
I'm pretty sure he's reviewed that stance since, has he? I mean, who cares? Who's counting?
It was a glory. Jeez. So he had come ready. I mean, there were notes. I don't think it was quite the Venables glasses.
No.
Moment,
kind of warm.
But he knew what he was saying and what he wanted to say. So he was up and running here, and the lads were, I would have said, body language wise, not expecting that.
No, it was certainly fueled by passion. And then it came in, but I don't know, I could have done my check on that, to be honest, in between the clips. The next situation where he talks about Nottingham Forest and Keane's exit, there's an interesting wrinkle in that discussion around the contract. I'm not 100% sure what the actual deal was.
Well, they're talking about, you see, it goes off, Dunphy's extolling the virtues of Keane's playing career, which is not really, I suppose, and Brady keeps trying to make the point, that's not really what we're discussing here. No one's in any disagreement with the fact that Roy Keane was a great player, but obviously this is going to be, you know, Dunphy's going to make this point at length anyway. And so, you know, Dunphy is making the point that, you know, here's an example of the greatness of this man, that when Nottingham Forest were in their relegation year, he had a clause in his contract, in effect, that if Nottingham Forest were relegated, he could leave for $1 million. And they were relegated. But who got player of the year? Roy Keane. And Brady's saying, well, that's not in the contract because he left for 3.75 million. So what's the story here? So that's kind of where they are. That's what this mini dispute. I mean, all good arguments need ridiculous tangents. And this was one of those. So I think we're going to jump here when that's kind of kicking off.
The last season, Roy played not first. They were going down. Mm. And he had a clause in his contract that if they went down, he could go for $1 million. Mm. Who won the player of the year? Roy Keane did more than anyone to try and keep them up.
That's so, not true, Ryan. He didn't have a clause in his contract to go for $1 million. He went for $3.5 million in the end to Manchester United. So if he had a clause in his contract, get your facts right.
No, my facts are right.
They're not right. I read
Patrick
your book.
Vieira, are you going to let me talk?
Well,
are you want more insults?
No, I'm not going to insult. Get your facts right.
I didn't say went for $1 million. I said he had a clause in his contract that allowed him to go for $1 million.
Well, why didn't he go?
Because there was a bidding war. Between Blackburn and Manchester United. Now, you get your facts right.
Boom. Get your facts right. I'm his biographer. Playing the biographer card. Will you not end up in some discussion about the Haaland thing at some stage as his biographer? But anyway.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. I'm listening.
Yeah, you're hooked at this stage. The next one is...
It's hard to believe, by the way, Twitter didn't exist for this. That's the only pity. It would have exploded.
Well, yes and no. They probably would have been taken off air beforehand if Twitter had existed.
I think that's true. I think the absence of Twitter...
The Dunphy stuff getting back to the UK quicker could have been an issue. This guy has just said this about someone. Like, it might take a couple of days to filter back, or maybe not at all. It would have been a different... I think it would have been a different legal climate with some of
I,
some
I
comments
think so
that
too.
Were made.
They would have been curtailed for sure.
Players from certain clubs and so on.
No, I think so. Arthur,
speaking of which, if there's to be, I suppose, a defining clip, this one kind of speaks for itself.
If you are going to quote gutter journalists calling Roy Keane a thug, you can do it on your own. If you're going to throw Mother Teresa, you can do that on your own as well. There's lots of tabloid journalists out there. I'm not going to listen to that kind
of... All right, listen, I am saying that written down in black and white in the Sunday Times was that particular...
Well, I just say to you...
You may not agree with that point.
I just say to you, I'll tell you, written down almost everywhere, and certainly in the annals of football, will be tributes to this man.
Oh, I agree with that.
This is a man argument for that. Who doesn't showboat like Niall Quinn. This is a man who actually goes and sees sick children in hospital. This is a family man with five children who's a credit to his country and to his family. But and I'm not going to listen to him being called a thug by you.
Hang on a second, though. Don't misquote me. I said that was written.
Why are you interjecting into this?
Because I'm saying there's an alternative view.
And whose view is it?
That's the view that was...
Whose view is it?
In the column on the Sunday Times.
Who's that column?
I'm
by who?
It's on the back page of the Sunday Times last Sunday. Look at it.
And who wrote it?
I can't remember his name.
I'll tell you who wrote it.
Who?
I can remember his name. Rod Little. He's the guy who ran away and left his wife for a young one.
At which point Bill says, ah, Jesus, no. Amen. No. You know, in Question of Sport where they do Guess What Happens Next?
Yeah.
If at the time... You had, for the million people watching, pressed pause when he said, I'll tell you who wrote it, Rod Little. And then put in, what happened next?
Yeah.
Not one even close.
No chance. No chance. But I mean...
And Giles and Dunphy just didn't read it. Just, like, so Bill is like, oh, Jesus. Giles and Dunphy are like...
Interesting.
Oh, wow, he's going there. I had forgotten that the Little... was a part of this debate.
Yeah, I always sort of assumed it was actually later, bizarrely, but I don't know. I mean, clearly not. I mean, the facts are there. But it's a memorable piece of work. I assume Little was asked to respond to this at some stage, was he?
Well, he was on...
It was funny, he spoke to
the last year or two.
When... It was funny because I was working with Gavin Cooney at the time at Balls.ie when Dunphy stepped down from the panel, or was stepped down, whichever way it went.
That was it.
Gavin reached out to Rod Little and spoke to him about it. Who I think, to be honest, was... What was the line? He was proud to say he was still with the young one.
Oh, what? Well, there you go.
Happy ending.
There's your headline. I have a vague memory of Rod Little on Liveline as well. When Eamon stepped down, as almost to pay tribute and say, listen,
it's not an Irish football shit show if you don't end up on Liveline, Joe.
I'm part of
that's
the
when you know you've made it.
Can you imagine, though, and it's like what made Bill O'Hurley so amazing... That panel, I mean, you're talking about three alphas.
Mm.
And Dunphy, I mean, I guess he's somewhere around his peak there. I mean, well, he had a long peak, to be fair. He's rather extraordinary. What a force of nature to be on a panel with. Can you imagine trying to think straight with all that coming at you?
Yeah, no, it is true. Like, it's...
Like, I have to deal with you.
I haven't...
And it's hard enough.
It's hard enough, really. Okay. But like, it's definitely unbelievable skill to sort of respond. Because as you know, if someone says something quite inflammatory, your line and response is really, really important. You know, you're instant, because if you let that run too far, as you know, you end up sort of charged for facilitating it too much.
Yes.
You know, and that's...
you don't want to be Mr. Oh, you can't say that.
You can't say that, and you shut it down, and it's gone. Yeah. When presumably he knows this is a brilliant debate, so let's keep this rolling.
This is one of the greatest examples of about three times he said, no, you just can't say that. And yet this thing still
you can't say that,
blossomed.
But maybe let's just...
It's genius.
Let's say something else. I mean, like, unofficially.
Yeah, so you can say that, but come here, did you see Rod Little called him a thug?
Yeah, exactly. This lad here, knowing. It's like, here's your red rag, Mr. Bull.
Any other clips you want to bring us?
The final one. It's only very short and swift. And it's just from... Well, John Giles raises a point and Eamon Dunphy begs to differ.
If it had been okay, Ferguson wouldn't have fallen out with him. I mean, Ferguson...
Ferguson's got the plot, John.
No, but Ferguson...
Keane is right.
Yes, but Ferguson is...
Keane is right.
Keane is right a lot.
He's right about everything.
But
in this situation... In this context.
Can I just finish?
There was a point when everyone thought, or certain people thought, that Roy Keane was right about everything. Like, there was that sort of movement in Irish life that Roy Keane on everything is correct.
If we had those standards across the society.
Exactly. If we all, like, Roy Keane could go and fix, the health service.
If Michael O'Leary and Roy Keane could run the country, this is generally...
Yeah, they could run anything. But, like, it's... I mean, I think that view has probably changed. I mean, we could probably play clips of Eamon Dunphy saying things, completely battling a different point on Roy Keane. Mm. So there we go.
And there we are. That is as good as it gets, is it not, Arthur?
That's the mark. I think that's the benchmark. I'm not... Again, Terry Venables, that was quite memorable.
Yeah.
Oh, the glasses. Yeah. That was good. He's got the glasses on. Well, this is going to be some good stuff here.
That did end Venables.
I think it had a role, yeah.
It didn't have a role. That decided it for the country.
Well, actually, given how the FEI CEO of the time would have been heavily influenced by the RTE panel, or allowed members of the RTE panel to assume influence, depending on what way you want to look at it, probably did, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
When you think about it, yeah. That was the heartbeat of the nation that needed to be... You needed to be able to tap into that, talk about managers, not chief executives.
Well, Arthur, that's a cracking day's work out of you.
Yeah, that's it. I'll be off.
Well done. There we are. 16 years on from Roy Keane's departure. What followed was maybe the greatest. And it's only 14, 15 minutes, but I mean, it's ba-bum, 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 ba-bum.
So it's out there for people to go. It's out there for people to go and watch the full thing, I assume, if Arthur was able to locate it.
Oh, yeah.
It's there.
It's there. It's must watch. Treat yourself. Because we're never going to see the likes of that again, I would think. Arthur O'Dea, thank you. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent, thanks a million, Dan.
Thank you.
I know you've moved mountains to get in here today.
Oh, listen,
appreciate it.
Just happy to be here to spend some time with you, Joe.
Football on... did you see this? Nastier than that RTE panel. Football and Off the Ball.
I actually am.
More withering. Brought to you by Sky. Catch the biggest live Premier League games every weekend on Sky Sports.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch big games from the Women's Super League live on Sky Sports.